Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Ernesto Araújo, former foreign minister of the Republic of Brazil, and Joseph Umar, executive director of Secure Free Society. We're looking at news in the Americas that connects the narco-terrorism gangs. You sometimes know them as cartels. That would be in Mexico, but they really range across all the governances that we speak of each week and can be and often are used as amoral ground troops by outside actors such as Moscow, Beijing, Tehran. We go now to Ecuador, that heretofore has been seen as a stand apart from the populist left authoritarianism wave in Latin America. But we learn that the president of Ecuador, under great pressure from his own legislature for corruption allegations, impeachment charges, President Lasso is not running for re-election. What is important here is the Ecuadorian culture has erupted into violence over the last months, and there have been reports of Ecuadorians arming themselves on the street because of the randomness of narco-terrorism and gangs. Now we have a political party of Ecuador's former president, Rafael Correa, naming a former lawmaker, Luisa Gonzalez, as his candidate for the presidential elections. Joseph, I come to you because I'm now lost in the tangle of the Andean chain. Correa was living in exile in Belgium, I believe. Charges of corruption. Lasso is stepping aside. So Correa now has influence in some fashion to introduce his picked candidate, Gonzalez, to be the presidency. What does this mean in terms of Ecuador? What does it mean in terms of the narco-terrorism that is now running rampant in the country?
So, John, Ecuador is one of the countries that we really have to pay attention to. There's a lot of strategic dimensions on the fact that it's one of the bridges between the Caribbean and the Pacific. It's right along the Panama Canal. It has major facilities for anti-narco trafficking. But all that is encompassed within the current situation of the country, which is high levels of violence, crime and violence, and high levels of political instability. We're talking about the political instability right now in the sense that they had to basically move up the election. The current president pretty much is going to end his term early. He's going to not end it in August, but the election is going to happen in August, and essentially he will not be reelected. He's not running for another term. And then we're going to see the next chapter of Ecuador. But while this is happening, the country's under siege by all kinds of narco-terrorist groups from all over the world. And when you can start to contextualize this, and this is an interesting way to look at this, because it to me is an amorphosis of what happened during the 2016 peace accord with Colombia's government and the FARC. Because when that peace accord was signed and the FARC demobilized, it had reciprocal effects in Ecuador. Ecuador, where the FARC operated for a long time, and we could go and remember the Angostura bombing that Uribe did against the FARC in the FARC camps in northern Ecuador. So we know that they were operating in Ecuador for a long time. Well, when they demobilized, basically, it opened up a competition for other actors to control the narco-terrorist trade. The first ones to come in were the Mexican cartels. The Sinaloa cartel and the Jalisco cartel that are already fighting a war inside Mexico made their way into Ecuador to basically set up proxies to control the cocaine trade. Now we fast forward to 2020. And in 2020, basically the pandemic accelerated this because the governing structure started to weaken, as it did everywhere else in the world. The high levels of the low levels of economic growth and the higher levels of inflation created an opportunity for these illicit actors, and that have two big advantages in Ecuador. One is a dollarized country, so that makes it a hub for money laundering. And two, the lack of visa, the lack of visa controls, the lack of immigration controls allows for outside actors to come in, criminal elements from abroad to come in. And the one of the most notable in the case of Ecuador is the Albanian mafia. The Albanian mafia already had a connection to the FARC from decades in the past. But what they did is they basically steered the cocaine production and the cocaine distribution to move to Europe. And being that Ecuador's on the Pacific. And this allowed for increased competition and violence in the country. So now what you're seeing is you're seeing the Mexican cartels competing amongst each other. They're also fighting with the Albanian mafia, who's trying to control elements of the drug trade. And this is creating an untenable situation of violence that forced the president basically to declare a state of emergency in Ecuador on repeated occasions. And that, despite the economic success that Ecuador could have, has made the country pretty much looked as a potential failed state. I was speaking to some people in Ecuador recently, and what they told me, what they're telling me, St. Joseph, if we don't pay attention to Ecuador within 5 years, this country could become another Venezuela, because the way that they're destabilizing it is at a level where you could get an autocrat or a potential dictator in charge. And then now what you're going to do is you're going to operationalize the criminal elements to work in a way that they haven't been in the past, which is essentially what happened in Venezuela.
And Joseph, does Ecuador is it influenced by Bolivia? Because Morales is always, I think of him as a bird of prey circling, or he and Correa in different camps.
No, they're not in different camps. When Rafael Correa was the president of Ecuador, he put Ecuador into what's called the Bolivarian Alliance of the Americas, which is basically an authoritarian anti-American political bloc along with Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela. So they're political allies. But beyond that, John, you actually hit on a very important point, because Rafael Correa's base to be able to prop himself up to the presidency, and then also his current base to be able to create destabilization politically in the country, are the indigenous movements inside of Ecuador. The CONAI is the biggest indigenous bloc, but he has his own indigenous proxies that he basically uses to be able to do consistent aggression against the current Ecuadorian government. Those indigenous groups, if you draw the networks out, they tie directly into Bolivia. And obviously, Bolivia is a major indigenous country, and Evo Morales considers him the indigenous king. So, yes, they're not only allies, but because of their ties to the narco-terrorist industry and their ties to indigenous communities. And I don't mean that all these indigenous communities are involved. And there's a lot of indigenous resistance against them. But because he has captured certain leaders, such as, for example, Yaku Perez in the case of Ecuador, those are the proxies that allow them to continue to persist into power even when they leave the presidency. And that's the case of Rafael Correa in Ecuador. It's also the case of Evo Morales in Bolivia, who left the presidency but still in power because he operationalized and weaponized these indigenous groups against their own communities.
The BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, the BRICS. It's an organization over the years that has been recommended as building a global South presentation, with Russia included. And Brazil necessarily leads because it's rich in natural resources. Now, the puzzle about the BRICS is that how it's going forward is that there are new applicants to join. I note Honduras, President Castro recently elected. This is from Tegucigalpa. Honduras President Castro formally requested the country's admission to the BRICS-led New Development Bank in a meeting with the bank's president, Dilma Rousseff. Castro's office said in a tweet late Friday. I also mentioned that Argentina, where it's coming to a very important election, where the inflation is running at 150%, and there's no reason to believe it's going to be reversed because the IMF and all, the World Bank and everybody have thrown up their hands about Argentina's economy and how it's managed by the Peronista leadership. They're also, Argentina's also looking to join the BRICS, or an application to the BRICS. So, Ernesto, I come to you. Is this something that Lula's government favors, to bring in Argentina, Honduras, and other parts of the Americas to the BRICS? Does that recommend itself to the Brazilian people?
Well, to Lula, yes, not to the Brazilian people. I think the Brazilian people would not like to see the BRICS becoming a supporting mechanism for narco-terrorist regimes and left-wing aligned regimes in the region. But Lula, yes, a big part of what he's trying to do with the BRICS is bringing BRICS money from the BRICS Bank, which is basically Chinese money, to save and to bail out Argentina. which puts Argentina with two options. I mean, either going that way and trying to be bailed out by China, or trying to do things as you should and go to the IMF. So there are huge geopolitical implications both ways. I think if Argentina really joins BRICS, and especially Argentina, Honduras, of course, would be important, but Argentina, because of the size of the economy. And if Chinese money is able to bring about, at least for a while, some more prosperity to Argentina, this could be a huge geopolitical shift and take the whole region much closer to the totalitarian bloc led by Russia and China. So... And this would be favored by Lula, not by the Brazilian people, I think, or the majority of the Brazilian people, but by Lula and his team. So I don't know what the West, I mean, the Democratic West is thinking about that. Ursula von der Leyen, the head of the European Commission, is arriving in Brasilia this week. And I'm sure she's going to talk about climate and that sort of things. And are not seeing that sort the geopolitical shift that's underway. Europe, the U.S. should mobilize to really press Argentina, other countries to stay in the democratic bloc in a way. But that's not what's going on.
The name Dilma Rousseff, that's a former president of Brazil, and she's now headquartered in Shanghai as head of the New Development Bank. So has Brazil already sent out invitations? This looks like China's using Brasilia to make gestures towards other parts of the continent.
Exactly. China is using Brazil to bring the whole South America towards BRICS and towards the Chinese sphere. That's very clear. And the BRICS Bank, the New Development Bank, is the main instrument for that. And the same way China is trying to use South Africa to bring Africa towards its sphere. But in Africa, they don't need that much because they already have a very strong economic presence all across Africa. But in Latin America, with all the more democratic tradition that we have and the more, let's say, influence from the United States, from Europe, from the rest of the democratic West, it's more difficult for China to... but they that's what they're doing. They use the prestige that Lula still has as a leader in the region to say, okay, that's the bridge that we need in Argentina, in Chile, in Colombia, and also in the smaller countries in Central America, to take those countries away from the democratic Western sphere towards the Chinese sphere.
My new favorite story in all of the Americas is a telenovela playing itself out in Bogota. Joseph introduced us last week. I believe there's been an update. This is Gustavo Petro, the former terrorist, now president of Colombia. And this headline, Colombia Attorney General's Office investigating Petro campaign financing. Joseph, as I recall, the details are bags of cash, former close assistant of President Petro, a woman who worked as a domestic help, and a man named Benedetti, former ambassador for Colombia, who has made a recording denouncing President Petro. We left the episode one of the telenovela there. Has there been development the last week, Joseph?
There has an unfortunate development. One of the individuals that was set to testify in the scandal, in the wiretapping scandal, remember this whole incident began with wiretaps that were being conducted in the presidential office of Gustavo Petro against the nanny of his chief of staff. And that sounds like a little bit convoluted, but his chief of staff, Laura Sarabia, her nanny was being accused of potentially stealing $7,000 or something like that, and that there was wiretaps that were placed on her. So one of the individuals that was going to testify in this was going to be investigated, was a lieutenant colonel named Oscar Davila Torres. Now, Oscar Davila was one of the chiefs of security at the presidential palace in Bogota. It's the equivalent of the Secret Service here in Washington that protects the White House. And he was set to testify this week or upcoming soon in this case. And he was found mysteriously dead on Friday night. Now, the initial surface, the initial reporting on that was that he was potentially killed. But now President Petro said he confirmed that he wasn't killed. He had committed suicide. Now, given the context and the circumstances of his death and the importance of him testifying, you know, there's a lot of speculation. There's a lot of questions to the, you know, what happened exactly and if it was in fact a suicide. But anyhow, so this is a kind of another episode, if you want to call it that, in a telenovela that's unfolding inside Colombia. However, it's very tragic because this individual might have been able to give more light, shed more light on what exactly was happening inside the presidential palace, given that he was one of the chiefs of security of that palace.
There's a theme here, Joseph. The night before you testify, you're found dead. I remember that happening in Argentina some years ago to the famous prosecutor. It seems obvious to those outside. Is this meant to be a message to other people who might want to talk? What can happen to you?
It is, John. And this is, you know, I think everyone in Colombia is interpreting this as a sort of intimidation factor here. Now, obviously, the president of Colombia, Petro, he's going to talk about how this had nothing to do with him. These are unfortunate circumstances, blah, blah, blah. But in reality, the big message that he's sending and the fact that he even commented on this, because actually I wouldn't, if I were the president of a country, you don't really comment on these things until an investigation is conducted. Right. But the fact that he's commenting on it so publicly is a message to anyone else that says, listen, if you're going to try to turn on this government or you're going to try to blow the whistle on this government, there are severe and even deadly consequences. Now, it's of note that this lieutenant colonel, De Villa Torres, he was actually going to speak to the attorney general, and the attorney general's in a public feud with President Petro that even goes before this recent scandal, goes before the other elements where President Petro was overseeding his constitutional authorities, thinking that the judiciary belonged to him. And I think the other side of this message was also to the attorney general to say, listen, this is how I operate. And if you want to go after me, there will be consequences. So there's an intimidation factor for sure in all this. We can't know exactly what took place, but let's say even in the unlikely circumstance that this lieutenant colonel did kill himself, we can also examine the likelihood that this was a forced suicide, which is very much what we discussed in Argentina, because as you mentioned, Alberto Nisman right. was also allegedly committed suicide before he was set to testify.
The telenovela continues. Joseph Umar, Ernesto Araujo. We're going to Brazil finally because there's been an opinion poll and a surprising result for President Lula da Silva. This is the New World Report. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details. Because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim, that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion. It's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.